All right, so today is January 25th, 2019. My name is Leah Goldstone, and I'm here doing an oral history with Alice Kanagaki. And we're doing this interview over the phone in Madison, Wisconsin. This interview is part of our Madison General School of Nursing Alumni Oral History Project from 1906 to 1982. So, Alice, can you say your full name and spell your last name?
Okay, my full name is Alice Misako Kanagaki, Kanagaki, and my maiden name was Noguchi, Noguchi.
All right, perfect. So, tell me about your background. Where did you grow up?
Okay, I was born in Vacaville, California, a little rural town, and my father worked on the fruit farms, and then when he got older, he said, this is too much for me anymore. So we got a little mom and pop store in a little town called Martinez, which is in the Bay Area, part of the little river that goes around there by San Francisco and out this way. Anyway, so this was in 1941, and then Pearl Harbor happened in December 7, as you know, and Martinez was a vital, considered a vital area because the naval weapons station was there. And so my parents, being aliens, because even though they had come from Japan many years ago, Asians were not allowed to become citizens. But anyway, and so they had to move out of Martinez. And so in time, there were rumors that we would be, the those of Japanese descent, would be sent to some kind of a camp or some kind of a location someplace inland. And so we sold the little store, and then we all moved to Suisun so that we could be sent wherever we were going to be sent to with some cousins. And so I think it was in April when they did send us to temporary assembly centers, and we were sent to Turlock, California. We were there for about 3 months, and the interesting thing is we met people from all over California. There were people from Southern California, Central California, and we were considered people from the Bay Area. They consider areas near San Francisco as the Bay Area. And so after 3 months, the permanent camps were completed, and there were 10 in total. And we were sent to a camp called Gila Rivers, Arizona, and it was in Arizona, and it was in the middle of a Indian reservation, and I think they had to get permission. The government had to get permission from the Indians to build this camp there. And there were two camps there, one and two, Butte and Connell, and we were assigned to Butte Camp. And I was there for my junior year and senior year. And so I graduated from high school there in the camp. And gratefully, the curriculum was adequate enough that it was we were able to take courses preparatory to going to college. But I had no idea what I was going to do with myself. And so my cousin, who happened to be going to Madison General Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin, wrote and said, "Hey, listen, I'm going to school here under the United States Cadet Nurse Program, and this is a government-funded free education." You see, during World War II, the civilian hospitals had lost so many of their staff nurses that some were threatened with closure. And so this very, very wise lady Senate Congresswoman, I think Oh, what the heck was her name now? Oh, I knew it until yesterday. Anyway, she introduced this bill that encouraged college-bound girls to take up nursing. And under the public health department, the government would pay for the 3 years of education. And so when my cousin wrote and told me about that, and she sent me an application to the Madison General Hospital School of Nursing, I quickly filled that out and mailed it in. And based on the fact that she was one of the most ideal students any school could have, and because I had stated I was her cousin, they accepted me. No questions asked, practically. Anyway, so and that's why I'm very grateful to Madison General Hospital that they accepted me and allowed me to stay in spite of my mischievous behavior. Now, what else?
Well, describe a little more about this mischievous behavior, just so we have kind of more of your personality background, just life at school.
Wait, was there a question there that I didn't quite understand?
Oh, no, it's fine. So when you went into the nursing school, had you had any prior interest in nursing?
Well, you know, in the 1930s, in 1940s, girls either took up being a secretary, a teacher, or a nurse, and then a rare gal would become a dietitian or a pharmacist or something. But generally, it was either a teacher, a nurse, or a secretary. And I remember my oldest brother saying, "Why don't you be a nurse?" And so that kind of sat in the back of my head. And while I was in camp, a friend of mine, her older sister was a registered nurse working in the hospital, in the camp, in these internment camps, and I saw her all dressed up in her beautiful white uniform with her navy cape and her cap on, and I thought, what a beautiful sight, and I thought, you know, I guess I do want to be a nurse. And so when when I finished high school, because my family said we have no money to send you on to school, my three brothers were in the service already, fighting in Europe. But anyway, and I thought, gee, I have nothing to do. And then when my cousin wrote, of course, you know, I decided this is what I shall do. And that's how I ended up in Madison General Hospital.
Okay. Was that pretty common amongst women, like just in the culture in general, that kind of role for them to become nurses and teachers?
You know, that could be a possibility. You might be able to say that and with some validity, because as I said, there weren't a lot of choices. And, other than the fact that, you know, you were told to get married, and or working in an office of some sort, other than the secretarial, you know, situation.
All right. So moving on to your life in Madison, did you live in the nursing dorms?
Oh, yes.
What was it like to live in that kind of environment?
Wonderful. You see, we were all young teenagers, all strangers, and we all made friendships that were lasting. They were all wonderful gals in this class, and to this day, you know, 70, 80 years later, we are still very close friends. Now, our class was not considered a large class. I think we started out with about 35 to 37 girls, and then for various reasons, they dropped out. And so when we graduated, there were only 20 left. And an interesting thing I want to tell you about is that some wise class member started what they called a round robin of letters. And so what you do is you write your letter, put it in the envelope, and send it on to the next person on the on the list. And it goes around to the 20 gals, and then when you get yours, you take out your old letter and put in a new letter telling about what you've been doing and so on. And so we kept this round robin of letters up for the, well, it's still going, although there are only four of us left, you know, participating. And, but, you know, this was the best time for me. It was the best 3 years of my life because this transition period from being a teenager to become a young adult, we were all in the same situation and you had all these wonderful friends and support. And so it was an easy transition to make. And so we all became, we entered as teenagers and we all became adults and we were all there to help each other. And so living in the dormitory, I enjoyed that very much because I had three older brothers and having all these gals around for friends, that was a treat.
So tell me a little bit more about some of the recreational activities that you did with the other girls in the dorms, just kind of your everyday kind of fun activities.
Okay. Number one, the school did occasionally provide a picnic, or we took, they sent us to take some swimming lessons, and someone came and taught us square dancing and that sort of thing. But amongst ourselves, what did we do? It was just fun because the university was close by, and so it was fun going over there to the student union, and you're familiar with that, where all the kids hung out, and so we'd go there too and buy a hamburger or something and maybe dance or have a Coke or something. And the Madison, one of the most beautiful cities in this country, had, I think, four lakes surrounding the town, and Lake Mendota, as you know, was right there, and it's a beautiful lake. And so often we would go there and just go down to the pier there and jump off the pier and play in the lake or something. Or, of course, it was fun walking downtown to the Capitol area or going to a movie or popping in and out of the different shops. And, there were many parks also. And Vilas Park was close to Madison General Hospital. And I think most of us spent a lot of time there, whether it was just to go canoeing or swimming or just lying out there on the beach. And it was within walking distance from the dormitories.
Great. So kind of transitioning more to the technical side, describe your training at Madison.
Describe the training. Well, I'll tell you, I was never a good student. Whether high school, I mean, I was a bad student in high school, not very, and I should have been a better student as a nursing student. I wish I had paid closer attention, taken better notes, and referred to the textbooks more often. Then I think I would have been a more knowledgeable and a better nurse. But I just didn't have that self-discipline, I guess. And other than that, we had wonderful instructors. They were all very kind and helpful, and they did their best to have us do our best.
Was it very one-on-one with your instructors? As you mentioned, it's a very, like, small class size. So was there, like, close teacher-student relationships then, or?
Yes, there was a close relationship between the instructors and us. Our nursing arts instructor, and, of course, they knew each of us, you know, personally by our first names, and if we weren't working up to snuff, they would let us know. And then the nursing instructor made sure that each and every one of us knew the clinical part of taking care of patients. Is that the right word, clinical part? Anyway, yeah, you know, whether it's bathing or walking them or, they hired a professional masseuse to come and teach us how to give back rubs. Now, you're quite young, so you don't understand that back in the 40s, a patient got a complete bath in bed and got an alcohol and powder back rub, and we were taught by a professional person on how to give a back rub. And and they enjoyed that so much. But today, I think nurses just kind of give a patient a wet a chemical solution, wet rag, and say, just clean yourself, right? Am I correct?
I'm not sure. I haven't been in a hospital in a pretty long time. But that's really interesting. I've never even thought about, you know, giving a back rub as a nurse. Like, that just sounds, it's so interesting to think about. But even more on that point, just tell me more about kind of some of the unique aspects of your training that you can remember.
I'm back to giving a patient a bath, because that involves, do you know that we would put their feet into a pan of warm water and wash their feet? And you had to be very careful you didn't spill that pan in their bed. Can you picture that? And this is 1940 during World War II, and everything was recycled. And when I say recycled, I mean if we gave an injection, that syringe was rinsed out with saline and then thrown into a pan of alcohol. And then the next patient that got an injection, that same syringe and needle was used. You rinse it out with saline and then draw up whatever solution you're going to shoot into the patient, and then go through the same process. And the same thing with rectal tubes. If you gave a patient an enema, you washed everything out and soaked it, and those tubes were boiled over and used over and over again with all the patients. Same thing with catheters, you know, for the bladder, Foley catheters, and then IV solutions. There was a nurse that made up the IV solutions and used the same tubing by boiling the tubing and then sterilizing it that way, and then it was all reused again. Isn't that shocking?
Very. How long did that continue on?
Oh, well into the 50s. And then I think by the 60s, there were a disposable equipment that the hospitals had. And so you did not reuse rectal tubes or syringes or things like that. I think that probably started in the middle 60s.
Wow. Were there any other, just on that point, because this is so interesting kind of to get a glimpse of what it was like to get training, is there anything else that kind of stood out to you about something that would be kind of shocking to people of today or in the future?
Well, married students were not allowed in our school at that time. And, of course, there were curfews every night, and there were several girls who were clever enough to break the rules, and they got away with it. But when I tried to break a rule, I got caught. Every time I did that, I got caught. And that's why I say I'm so grateful the school did not discharge me and allowed me to stay. I think I just had this black cloud over my head, because if I did something that the other girls got away with, I got caught. Anyway, anything else unique being a student nurse? Yeah, well, of course, as I said, the curfews and drinking was not allowed. You were not allowed to go into any bars whether and if we wanted to go home, you had to have a note from home saying that you can go home. And there, I lied and I said I was going home to Chicago where my family lived. And I think I faked a note from my mother. And I did this because a classmate said, hey, listen, come home with me this weekend, you know. And she encouraged me to do some lying. And so I said, okay. And so I went home with this gal named Maybelle. And we had a great time, but we had one of the worst snowstorms the country had. And so, of course, we had to call in and say there was no transportation. And call in and say we couldn't get back to the school. And I had to admit that I was there illegally. Now, I didn't know that transportation from Chicago to Madison, Wisconsin had also stopped because of the storm. If I had known that, I guess maybe I wouldn't. They expected me not to come back from Chicago, but when I admitted I had gone home with Maybelle, I was campused for a month, meaning, you know, I couldn't leave the dormitory for any reason.
Wow.
Therefore, I missed, I think, my brother's wedding. But there it is. And they were quite strict with our behavior.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it, for sure, compared to today.
But I'll tell you something. The food at Madison General Hospital was the best. We had two of the best cooks in the whole country. And pastry bakers. And I think every classmate must have gained 10 pounds. Oh, yes. By the time they were seniors and dating, they decided, well, maybe I better lose weight. And so everybody was on a diet when they were seniors. But the food was just wonderful. And I've worked in several of the different hospitals, and none of them would compare to the food that we got at Madison General Hospital. And, you know, there was food rationing, right? We had to have ration tickets. You wouldn't know that. Of course, you're too young, but maybe your grandparents would remember that. But hospitals were allowed to buy, meat. And, of course, Wisconsin being a dairy country, we had plenty of cheese and meat and that sort of thing. And... but the food was just outstanding. I've never had such delicious roast pork or roast beef or cinnamon buns or macaroni and cheese. Oh, they were the best cooks.
And were the cooks in the dorms or were they in just the hospital?
Well, no, the hospital had the big kitchen where all the cooking was done for the patients, and on the basement floor was the dining room for the nurses and the interns and residents and doctors.
I see. And kind of gearing back towards more of the classes, in some of my research that I did just on looking at pictures and looking up online different information, I saw that in the dorms they also had some classrooms. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
Did you have any classes there?
There were two dormitories. As a freshman, we stayed in one called Rest Harrow, which was an older building, and 10 of us lived on the fourth floor. And that was our freshman year. And then for the next year, we moved to McConnell Hall, which was a beautiful building. And one half of it was for graduates. You know, graduates renting a room, and the other half had classrooms down in the basement, and then there was a huge auditorium and some student, you know, rooms for student nurses on that other wing. But McConnell Hall was probably one of the most beautiful nurses' dormitory I'd ever lived in or seen. As I said, I've worked in several other hospitals, and they either didn't have a dormitory for young single graduates or the student nurses. I think the student nurses at the Milwaukee, where I worked at the, I think it was a Milwaukee Lutheran hospital, the students stayed in homes that were owned by the hospital. And then at Cook County Hospital, where we matriculated to in Chicago, it was a 15-story dormitory, but it was very grim and lonely there. But McConnell Hall was the most beautiful. It was modern. It was a modern building, and it was just a joy to live there.
And either in the dorms or even just in your experience as a nursing student, did you have much interaction with either physicians or, like, pre-med students?
With other, did you say with, not with pre-med students?
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No, only at work. You know, they were called externs. They came from the medical school from the University of Wisconsin, and they were being exposed to the different units, and they were called externs. And well, I'll tell you, as I said, in those days the schools were very strict. As an example, we were not allowed to enter an elevator before a doctor. We stood back until the doctors got into the elevator, and then we were allowed to get in. If they came to the nurse's charting desk, we were supposed to get up and give our chairs to the doctors. And as I said, you know, that kind of strictness existed for us.
So more on that too. When in your training, did you have any crossover with physicians, or was it mostly just the nursing community?
Oh, wait a minute. Would you state that question again?
So in your training, like during your classes or exams or anything like that, did you have a lot of crossover with physicians, or was it mostly just contained in the nursing community?
Crossovers. I don't know exactly what you mean by that, but I'm telling you, we were expected to treat the doctors with great respect, and no familiarity was allowed.
Oh, okay,
and,
yeah, that was kind of what
we
I was asking.
Supposed
yeah.
to step back when they arrived, so that we would not be in their way, and so on.
I see. And did you also experience that as? Or after you graduated nursing school, like as a nurse, did you experience that same kind of distance from physicians?
That things had changed?
Or like you said, during your nursing school experience, you and the physicians, the nurses and physicians were very separate. There was not familiarity. Is that also the experience you had in your career as a nurse?
Oh, as a graduate nurse? Well, you know, we were respectful, but we were allowed to speak to them, and so in a friendly fashion, yes. And of course, there was some dating that went on, and so, yeah, things changed when you were a graduate.
Mm-hmm. So discuss some of your nursing school cohorts, like the people that you kept in touch with. How was that, have you kept in touch with a lot of your nursing school friends?
Well, yes, we did. As I told you about the round robin of letters. And so that really kept us all in touch. You know, we knew who got married and how many, which kids, the children that they had, et cetera. And then we had a reunion, I believe, almost every 5 years. And even though I lived out in California, I think I attended every one of them except the first one. I must have been pregnant with that one. But anyway, I attended every reunion. And so, you know, that being right there with all of our classmates, that was great, great fun. And so I think... because we were a smaller class and we were all able to keep in touch, and so those reunions are great.
Great. And is there anything else that you would want to add about your experience as a nursing student?
gosh, the best years of my life. And as I said, and we were all very poor. And the program, the United States Cadet Nurse Program, allowed us to have $15 a month stipend as freshman, and then $20, I think, as sophomore, and then maybe $25 as seniors. And, of course, in those days, you know, you could buy an awful lot with a dollar. But even so, we really learned how to stretch our dollars. And, of course, those who came from families who could, their parents gave them money to spend. I came from a poor family, so I had to make my $15 a month stretch to even buy our own private toiletries or any ice cream that you wanted or something like that. But as I said, coming from California, and although I grew up with mostly Caucasian friends for different reasons, even though there was a large Japanese-American community in my little town, so for me, going to an all-Caucasian school was nothing new because my friends back home were Caucasians. And it was interesting to see that there were some girls who were German and mostly Norwegians. And the fun thing is when they went home, they would bring back Norwegian goodies, like I think a krumkaka was some kind of a crispy cookies and some kind of a fish dish. And they would bring home, bring back food from home like that that was typically Norwegian. And for me, that was really interesting and a treat. And there were some German girls. And of course, my classmate and best friend, whom I hope you will interview, her name is Fung Wong Scholes. And she and I became close friends. And we are still probably the best of friends now. We've traveled together and done a lot. And we keep in touch. And she's going to be 93 this month, I mean next month. And it was a treat for me to have her as a roommate. She invited me home to her home in Beloit, Wisconsin. And I met all of her brothers and sisters, and there were seven all together. And as I say, I hope you can interview her, because she lost her father when she was only 12. And she was the second eldest, older brother 14. And they all pitched in, worked. The mother could speak no English. And they all survived, existed, and each one of them became outstanding professions in their professions. Physicians, dean of a college, and so on. So this Fung Scholes Fung Wong Scholes has an interesting family background. And when she left training, and she was one of the better nurses in our class. Not only was she smart, but she's one of these girls that was so well organized and neat and quick. I used to envy her because she was such a capable person. And I think when she went back to Beloit and she worked at a small local hospital, she developed an emergency department, which they needed badly. And so, you know, she has a very interesting background. So I hope that you would include her in the interviews, because generally speaking, I think most of the stories you'll probably get from, what, the 20 other girls you're going to interview, mm-hmm. are probably, you know, similar in that they came from a nice home that could afford to send them to school. And they worked, or maybe they got married and didn't work, and so on. Whereas, you know, her story, I think, is interesting. Now, I had to work, so I worked for about 37 years, I guess, before I retired.
Mm-hmm. And so describe your career as a nurse after nursing school.
my years or just a few of those years?
Just describe your career in general.
Oh, okay. All right. When we graduated at Madison General Hospital, we were all allowed to work in the department that we would choose as our specialty. Some of the girls were working at the Veterans Hospital through a program, and my friend was working in surgery, and others were working elsewhere. I was working in the labor and delivery department, and I found that very interesting. So I went to Chicago Lying In to take a six-month course on obstetrics. Chicago Lying In is in Chicago. It's part of the, I think, the medical school at University of Chicago, and it's a big maternity hospital. And so I learned so much there. It's amazing that I, for a change, I buckled down and I studied, and I learned a lot. And in your questionnaire, you say, what have you done that you are proud of? Well, number one, I'm proud that I chose nursing and that I worked for 35 to 37 years as a nurse doing my best. But more than that, because of that 6 months training in obstetrics, I think, now this might be more like bragging or boasting rather than just being proud, but I'm proud of the fact that I had learned so much at that extra training in obstetrics that I think I saved the lives of about three or four babies because I was able to recognize abnormal situations that were going on with a woman in labor that even though it was in the middle of the night, I'd call their physician and I'd tell them what was happening, and they would come in the middle of the night and they did a C-section and save that baby's life. And, you know, that kind of thing happened about three, four times, and I was grateful that I did take that extra course in obstetrics and learned some of the dangerous situations that can happen when you're in labor.
Mm-hmm. And so did that course really drive you towards your focus in your career, or did you, like, what was your, like, specialty?
I stayed in labor and delivery for about 12 years. Then a friend of mine said, hey, listen, she said, we have a lot of fun up in surgery. Come and, she says, I'll help you. So come and work in surgery with us. And this is a small community hospital. So I said, well, okay, I felt like I needed to change. I was getting so that I was kind of tired of listening to the women screaming when they were having labor pains. But anyway, so I started to work in surgery, and I loved it. And I didn't know beans from buns, but I got a book on instruments, and she taught me, and she threw me in with the difficult specialists. And in time, I loved working in surgery. And then I got pregnant, and I had a couple of kids, and so I gave that up. And then when I went back to nursing again, I was doing medical surgical work. And then they started the intensive care, cardiac care units in late 60s, early 70s. And so I took a course on cardiac nursing, and I did that for about another 15 years, and that was kind of where I worked, was like medical intensive care, and across the hall was the surgical intensive care, and we worked back and forth. So working in the intensive care unit is very, it's stressful and challenging, but so, you feel like you've really accomplished something when you kept the person alive and they got well. And so that's what I did for my final years, 15 years, working in the coronary care unit, which was like medical intensive care. And sometimes we'd help out with the surgical intensive care where they did the open heart surgeries and such.
Are there any memories that stand out to you that you'd like to share of certain cases, like just throughout your career?
Certain memories that stand out in my career?
Yes.
Well, oh, gosh. Oh, this is interesting. None of the hospitals had a good retirement program for nurses. As a matter of fact, they didn't have any until, I believe, maybe the nurses in San Francisco, California, objected and said, hey, you know, they should have some kind of a retirement program for nurses. And so the different hospitals started to do that. But they were not at least where I worked, they were not really adequate. Like the last place that I worked in, they put $2,000 in IRA for each year that you worked there. Whereas some of the industries and other businesses, they have a program for their retired people where they get a monthly income of whatever that really adds to their Social Security and is very helpful. But the nurses never had a good retirement program at the different places that I worked. So are you a student nurse, did you say?
No, I just work in the history department.
Are you a registered nurse working in the history department?
Oh, no, I'm literally just an interviewer for the UWR guys.
Oh, so I'm making the mistake of assuming that you were either a student nurse or an RN and would know what I'm talking about. But I guess some of this stuff was kind of fuzzy.
No, please elaborate on any of the technical terms, just for, you know, the record.
Uh-huh. Okay, what was the question? And my mind drifted.
Oh, it's all right. So you mentioned, you were just talking about the, I'll just go back to the original question. Are there any memorable moments of your career that you can think of that really stood out to you?
Not really, except that this may sound judgmental, but as a nurse, you learn who the really good, dependable, sincere, honest, kind, skilled doctors are and who aren't, so that you know, I would recommend certain doctors to friends and tell them to avoid others because they just didn't measure up to what I think a good doctor should be. Now, that we're in that position where we observe every one of the doctors functioning, and so we know exactly what their personalities are like and what their skills and capabilities are like, how they treat the patients, and they may be aware of this and maybe they aren't, but we are, the nurses do observe the doctors very closely, and so you can go to any hospital and ask a nurse and say, listen, I'm looking for a good orthopedic surgeon. Can you just give me the names of three good orthopedic surgeons? Because I need to have some surgery done. And a nurse will be able to give you, any nurse will probably be able to, that are familiar with the orthopedic surgeon, give you the names of three good doctors, and she'll avoid the ones that you really shouldn't go to because of their personalities or skills or whatever. So that's that's kind of a powerful position for a nurse,
mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, I'm just going to tell you one kind of a sad and funny story, that just to give you a laugh for the day.
Sure.
Okay, when I was working on the ward, it was 9 in the evening, all the patients had been settled, all the meds had been passed, and we were going to quiet down and chart, and then the emergency department called and said, hey, we're sending you an elderly gentleman that was found lying in the gutter. And so we said, okay. And so we prepared the bed for him, and so I was admitting this gentleman, and, the hospital sheets are white, and as I was taking his vitals, meaning his temperature, blood pressure, and listening to his heart and chest and all that kind of stuff, I said, Mr. So-and-so, do you know where you are? And he looked at me, and he said, the Undertakers. Isn't that kind of a sad but funny story?
That is funny. So, is there anything else that you would like people in the future to remember about your time and training at the UW-Madison Nursing School?
Well, you know, every girl has their goals on what they want to become, whether it's a physician or a dietitian or a teacher or whatever. But I think going into nursing is very satisfying. And, of course, you can, you're prepared to earn your own living. And for a man to marry a nurse, that's a wise choice. Because I don't know how many times different husbands have asked their nurse wives, you know, oh, I've got this, what should I do? Or the nurse wife could say, well, this is happening to you, so you better go get it checked out by the doctor, whereas they may have ignored it. And I think nurses make the best wives. But on the other hand, I've known a lot of sad nurses who married jerks who probably said, oh, marry a nurse. They'll take care of you and they'll earn money and support you. And I've had a couple of friends like that who had husbands that took advantage of them that way. But that's what I got to. That's kind of a trite little bit of judgmental observation.
And is there anything else that you'd like for the record before I conclude this interview?
I'm grateful that I'm really grateful, very grateful for the United States government and the cadet nurse program during World War II. It was a free education. And I'm so grateful because I'm glad that I had this nursing education because I could take care of myself and I could earn a living without depending on someone else and also help other people if they needed my help. And I made so many wonderful friends. Living in a dormitory at Madison General Hospital at McConnell Hall, as a graduate, on this one wing, most of us, we were in our 20s and single and working at Madison General Hospital. We all became very good friends, and they came from all over the different schools. And I've kept in touch with many of them, and many, of course, I lost to many of them. But this one gal, she and I became the best of friends. She lived in Florida. I'm 92, and I think she's 91, and we still keep in touch. And so living in a dormitory, some people may frown on it, but for me, I thought it was a great place to make friends and have a family away from your own family, and especially McConnell Hall. I don't know if you've ever been there. If you ever wandered around Madison General Hospital or wandered around McConnell Hall. You know, it was a beautiful place to live. Also, when I entered training, Madison General Hospital was about, I think it was about a 250-bed hospital, and it was quite old, and I have a picture of it, and it was just an old red brick building. And today, it is this big, beautiful medical center. And as I said in our last reunion, you know, we had a tour of the place, and the funniest thing is we recognized a black and white a linoleum floor in a hallway, I think over by obstetrics from the old hospital, and we all laughed and said, you remember this crazy linoleum, this black and white, it's still here? But, so have you walked around, have you been around Madison General Hospital and the dormitory?
I personally haven't, but I'm definitely going to after this. It seems like very interesting.
Yeah, I know. Because you work for the university, if anything happened to you, you would go to the Wisconsin General Hospital, of course.
Right.
You know, but I'm proud of Madison General Hospital that it grew to be such a beautiful medical center, and it connect it. It's called Meritor, and it there used to be another hospital called Methodist, and it was on the other side of town, and it changed its name to Meritor, and they combined, these two hospitals combined, and formed this, I think, a Meritor Foundation Hospital, or whatever they call it now. So, anyway, progress. And how did you happen to go to University of Wisconsin?
I also came from California, and my grandfather worked at Madison General Hospital, so kind of a funny overlap.
Your grandfather worked at Madison General Hospital?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, in what capacity?
I'm not sure. I'd have to look back up. But focusing more on you and this interview, is there anything else that you can think of that you'd like to add before I conclude this?
No, only that I'm glad I became a nurse, and I'm grateful for the cadet nurse program and for Madison General Hospital for accepting me and allowing me to stay and finish.
Well,
so
wonderful.
I have wonderful memories of Madison General Hospital and the town of Madison. That is the most beautiful city in the U.S.
Perfect. Well, then, if all is said, then I'll wrap up this interview for today. And together we can also plan, if you'd like, a follow-up interview and discuss more of the technicalities of publishing this interview.
Okay, sure. And I really sincerely hope you will consider interviewing Feng Wong Scholes. And I think did I give you her telephone number and address?
Yes, I believe we contacted her. So
yeah,
we'll wait to hear.
And as I said, the unique thing about us is that we were student nurses during World War II, being educated under the Cadet Nurse Program, and that program only lasted for 5 years. So we are definitely an endangered species, and there aren't many of us left. And so our interviews would be just a little different from some of the other graduates that finished later on. Okay?
All right. Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
When they accepted her, she went to the hospital for an interview, and they said, by the way, there's going to be a Japanese-American girl in your class. I hope you two will be able to get along. I don't know what made them ask her that, and she didn't either, but I think they thought that we were going to clash. At any rate, she was very nice and friendly, and I'm kind of an outgoing person, and so we became friends, and we lived next door to each other, and we lived up on the fourth floor at Rust Harrow, and the 10 of us that lived up there, we all became the closest friends that anyone could, you know, make in their lifetime. Anyway, and so those 3 years as a student for me was the best years of my life. And there we were in this beautiful town of Madison. And I do believe there were 3 or 4 lakes around the town of Madison. And I just thought this was the most beautiful city in the whole, you know, whole of the United States. And a friend of mine and I even biked around Lake Mendota, and it took us about 3 hours, but it's a beautiful town anyway. So I was so happy there. And I'm the kind of a student that if I study hard, I will get good grades. But I like to have fun, and so when I goofed, then of course my grades wouldn't be that good. But I did work hard and get some decent grades there. But anyway, so after we graduated, I was working in the obstetrical department when we graduated. And many of the classmates went home to work at hospitals near their homes, or 2 of them went on to the University of Wisconsin to get their degrees.
And so we were all scattered, and just a few of us stayed at Madison General. And I found the subject of obstetrics very interesting. And so when our head nurse said that she had been to a 6 or 8 month obstetrical course at Margaret Haig on the East Coast, and another gal that I worked with said that she had been to Chicago Lying In, which is a 6 month course on obstetrics at the Bob Roberts Hospital, part of the University of Chicago. And so I thought, well, that's closer. I think I'll go there. And so I spent 6 months studying obstetrics at Chicago Lying In, and I think I learned everything there is possible about the female reproductive system of babies, pregnancies, and deliveries, and so on. And so I sort of specialized in that for about 12 years. And you know, I'm not one of these people that have accomplished a lot or did great things, but because of the course that I took, I feel that what I learned there on how to keep an eye out for dangerous signs for a pregnant woman in labor, I think I spotted things that I notified the doctor about, and so the babies were saved because of what I had learned at that course. So I was very grateful. And one example was, of course, in the middle of the night, we had some ladies in labor when I was working in Milwaukee, and I could hear that the heartbeat became just a little slower and a little irregular during a labor pain. And I thought, now this is not right. Something is not right. So I called the doctor in the middle of the night. And they don't like to be bothered in the middle of the night. I know that. And he wasn't happy at first, but then when I told him the problem, he came right over, and of course they did a C-section on the woman, and I think there was something about the umbilical cord. And so each time she had a labor pain, it kind of squeezed the umbilical cord, and the baby's heartbeat slowed and got irregular. And so things like that that I had learned at this course, I was really grateful. And so I did that for about 12 years, and I moved. I loved Wisconsin. I wanted to stay there, and I think there's an article about me that said that I said that I wanted to snag some man and marry and stay in Madison because it's such a beautiful town, but no one would have me. So I came back to California, where I was born, and I worked in labor and delivery. And then a friend of mine and I, we went to Hawaii to work for a year. Now, this is before statehood. And to truly know Hawaii, the customs of the people, and all the different ethnic backgrounds, and their different customs and ideas and feelings about their life there in Hawaii was so fascinating that the 1 year that I spent there, I felt, was very educational, entertaining, and just a colorful year in my life. Anyway, and I got married and came back to California and then had two boys and continued to work in nursing. And I worked in obstetrics until a friend said, listen, we have more fun in surgery. You've got to come and work with us. So I said, okay. And she taught me there was everything there was to know about working as a surgical nurse. And so I worked, and they made me scrub for some of the grumpiest doctors. Anyway, and so I loved working in surgery. And then I had a couple of kids, so I retired from nursing for a while. Then I went back to nursing, and then those were the days, I would say the late 60s, when they started to have coronary care units for patients with heart problems. Before, they were just admitted to a medical ward and cared for, but now they had coronary care units. And later, it grew into being intensive care units, including other problematic conditions. Anyway, so I took the course on coronary care and worked in the coronary care unit, and then in a tiny hospital. And so I moved over to this large hospital and worked in their coronary care unit. And that was a fascinating phase of nursing, challenging, sometimes scaring, many times, you know, rewarding. And so that's what I was doing when I finally retired at the age of 63.
Mm-hmm.
And then I golfed. I love to golf. And I was never a good golfer, but I loved to golf. And I golfed for about 40 years. And so most of my time was spent golfing or playing bridge. I don't know. Have you ever played bridge, the card game bridge?
I've heard of it.
And I love to play bridge. And so my retired life became golf and bridge. And I'm sorry I didn't volunteer and become a productive, resourceful person doing something worthwhile. Instead, it was more like indulging myself with pleasures like golf and bridge. And finally, I started to clean out the house and things like that. And my boys were already into college, out of college, and out working and such. And so that's my life in nursing. But I missed it for a little while. And the strange thing is that nurses just seem to recognize each other as a friend, a peer, a fellow nurse. And so it seems like most of my friends that I have, at least 75% to 80% of them, are retired RNs. So I wonder if that has occurred elsewhere. And the cadet nurse program, of course, I think I skipped telling you that the cadet nurse program that my cousin told me about was that government was going to pay our way, pay for the 3 years of education that we were to have, as long as we agreed to join one of the military services as long as we were in war, or else stay in civilian service. And of course, we all agreed. And then by the time we graduated in 1947, the wars were over. And so, you know, we can do as we wanted to. And in a way, I wish I had joined one of the services, because I think we could have traveled to another country, and that would have been a very adventurous, exciting time in one's life. But anyway, so after the cadet nurse program ended, I think it lasted for about 5 years, 1943 to about 1948, and then when the war was over, the cadet nurse program, which was initially for the purpose of filling in the staff at different civilian hospitals that lost their nurses into the military service, and some of them were threatened with closure because they lost so many of their nurses. And so we, as student nurses, cadet nurses, assumed a lot of responsibility that I don't think that the student nurse has to assume today. But anyway, so probably in the 90s, yes, about the early 90s or late 80s, two of my friends at the golf course were also former cadet nurses. And so we said, hey, listen, we're a dying breed. Why don't we have a reunion and see how many cadet nurses we can dig up around here? And living here in the Bay Area near San Francisco and Berkeley and this area. So we had an article in the newspapers, and some of the other newspapers picked it up. And we had lunch at this restaurant, and 56 former cadet nurses turned out. And there were tables out in the hallway, and it was such a rewarding. And one of the girls brought the entire uniform, from hat to purse to raincoats and just everything, and a model, and dressed the model in the former cadet nurse uniforms, and that was really a treat for everyone to see. Anyway, and one gal who lives about 50 miles away said, I just heard about it this morning. I jumped in the car and came over here just to be part of this gathering. And so that was, I would say, one of the most successful events that the three of us cooked up. And so all these cadet nurses from around the Bay Area here. And then I got calls from some of the former cadet nurses from like Oregon, Nebraska, and New York. And they said, hey, someone sent me a news article about what you guys did. And, you know, tell me about it. And so I said, listen, you could do the same thing too. Just advertise in your local paper that, you know, the cadet nurses should get together and have a reunion. And I think, you know, it would have been a good, a good 50 years since they all were students as cadet nurses. And so I don't know if those gals that I suggested that to did it or not, but anyway, it makes me smile every time I think about how successful that reunion turned out to be when they all turned out and we all had stories to tell, and I don't think anyone remembers what we had for lunch because we were having such a good time reminiscing and listening to everyone's stories about the different experiences that they had. And so that's my career as a nurse, and I'm telling you, things have become so technical, and nursing is a big challenge for someone, an oldster like me, with all these old-fashioned nursing ideas still in my head. And most of the nursing has changed so much. For instance, patients are given bed baths and really cleaned up and given exercises and just treated personally, you know, by the nurses individually. And today, I think it's more like the nurses are looking in the computer, and I don't think they even give them bed baths. And it's like, okay, you know, get up and get going kind of an attitude now. And then they're released from the hospitals in much fewer days than they used to stay after a major surgery or any kind of serious illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I have to say.
Agree. You answered a lot of my questions. I really only have two then. So my first question would be, as a cadet nurse, like while the war was going on, did you talk about that at all with your peers, like in school, or was it just kind of in the background?
Well, no, we did. And many of us have brothers in the service. And so, you know, we did say, well, some would say, no, I want to join the Navy. Some would say the Army's okay, or the Air Force or something. We did talk about it briefly, but other than that, it was all, you know, we were teenagers, 18, 19, and then on into 20 before we turned 21 and finished and became graduates. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, most of our subjects are on lots of other things, I guess. Men and our objections of all the authorities in the school. And other than that, I guess it was just a brief conversation about what military service we would join when we finished.
Did a lot of your peers join the military service, or did most of them stay domestic?
Gosh, I don't think any of them, well, because the war ended before we finished, many of them were got married after they finished, and two of them went on to the University of Wisconsin to get their degrees,
mm-hmm.
and we were all so happy to finally earn some money after pinching pennies. Of course, the government gave us a stipend of, the first year, it was $15 a month. And then it went to 20, and then it went to 30. But so when we finished, we were so happy to be earning some money, me especially, that although I wanted to join the service, I didn't. I wanted to just make some money and spend it. But I wish I had joined one of the military services, because, as I said, it would have been an additional education and travel opportunities, and who knows.
Mm-hmm. And so,
and what,
oh, sorry, continue.
What else?
Oh, I was just going to say, I forgot. I should have written it down. I guess, is there really, I mean, you've really answered almost all of my questions that I had written down beforehand. But was there anything else that you'd want to mention kind of about your life at school? I know you mentioned a lot of how your nursing career really evolved, but anything about being a student at Madison General?
As I said, those 3 years at Madison General as a student nurse with all those wonderful classmates were the best 3 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And we were very fortunate. The food was fantastic. And we had, very nice rooms. And, of course, we had good health care. And the town of Madison, as I said, is such a beautiful town that we could walk in any direction, and you'd run into a lake or something. You know, it's just beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so I truly enjoyed those 3 years as a student nurse, and we all became very close friends, but, you know, most of us. Mm-hmm. And my friend, the Chinese-American girl, her name was Feng Wong. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she and I got together, and we worked in Milwaukee and shared an apartment, and she worked at a different hospital. I was working at the maternity pavilion of a Lutheran hospital. And we went to Marquette University, trying to work towards our degrees. And we'd go to school, go to work in the daytime and then go over to the school from like 4 to 6, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they had a special program for working nurses, working towards a degree. And so we did that for a year, and then she got married and moved out. And I couldn't afford this apartment that we shared. And so I think some of my friends from work were going to California, so I said, well, I think I'll go to California too. And so that ended my hopes of getting a degree in nursing. You know, to get a bachelor's degree in nursing.
Would that have, like, changed any of your career, or was it just kind of an addition for your own personal kind of benefit?
That's right, it was. It was just kind of a personal goal. Mm-hmm. Because no matter where I worked, and I worked in several different hospitals, the degree nurses did not get better positions or more pay, mm-hmm. or anything like that. It was more tenure, you know, seniority, mm-hmm. that, among the nurses that counted. And so, it, as you said, it was just a personal goal. Mm-hmm. But the best way to have done it would have been to go to a 5-year nursing program at a college, at a university or something. And that way, you know, you get it all done while you're students, and you didn't have to do it while you were working. Mm-hmm. But that's gone. it was on the bucket list, you might say. Mm-hmm. But it faded.
Well, is there anything else that you'd like to add? You really did, again, answer all of my questions. So if there's anything else you'd like to add, otherwise we can conclude the follow-up interview.
Well, I'll tell you, being a nurse is really a plus because, number one, you can get a job any place. I mean, I worked in Hawaii and I worked in Illinois, and you know, there was a time when they did have restrictions as to where you had your nursing education. And for instance, two registered nurses from Illinois came to work at Madison General Hospital, and the authorities, the state board, did not accept their scores from the state boards given in Illinois, and they had to take something like nutrition and pharmacology over again and take those tests to meet the criteria of the Wisconsin State Board. So, you know, that seemed like it wasn't fair. But then other states wavered that, and they said, okay. And fortunately, I think graduating from a school in Wisconsin was acceptable in any state in the United States. And so when I came to California, you know, they accepted my credentials from Wisconsin. And but I think they did away with that. And so, as I said, being a nurse is a plus. You can get a job just about any place. And even though you were grateful to have this vocation, profession, a bit of nursing education that allowed you to work any place, people respected nurses for some reason. They'd say, oh, you're a nurse. Oh, you're a teacher, or something like that. And if you said, I'm a dietitian, they'd say, oh, what do you do? Oh, well, I plan meals for the hospitals or something. They'll think, well, that sounds boring. But as I said, nurses got special respect. And I think when we bought our house, we were told by the bank that when the bank gave a loan to a couple to buy a home, they only took in the husband's earnings, career possibilities, and then considered whether you would be eligible for a loan or not, except if the wife was a nurse or a school teacher. So that was back in the 50s. You know, mm-hmm. That sounds antiquated, doesn't it?
A bit.
Huh?
A bit antiquated, yes.
Yeah, but anyway, that's the way it was, you know, in those years back then. Mm-hmm. 70 years ago, for heaven's sakes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And anyway, and being in this profession, I met some of the most wonderful people as fellow nurses, or maybe a patient, and some doctors that were outstanding in their field. And you just, like, I had open heart surgery, and I had one of the best chest surgeons, I guess, nationally known, and I was so grateful. And so he was very, very special. He was from Norway. And he was such a nice, nice person. And so you meet doctors of all level of quality and personalities, and it makes, you know, it's really very interesting how I wish I could advise the doctors that it's very important that you do not dress sloppily when you visit your patients, and that you should treat the patients with respect and kindness, and the nurses with respect and kindness. Because if you're a doctor that comes onto the ward and corner and a sort of authoritative and not so kind and considerate, then the nurses will ignore you and won't do the little special things to make your presence comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the doctors realize that.
Hmm.
But it's true, because the nurses hold this power of making it comfortable for a doctor or not.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if he's one of these grumpy old, you know, bossy, put down kind of a physician, the nurses will not get up and get his charts for him, and they will not get up from their chair and give him their chair to him to sit down to write their progress notes or anything like that. And they won't get up and say, okay, you know, I'll go tell the patient that you're here and kind of get her ready. They would totally ignore him.
Mm-hmm.
And if they only knew that, if they would treat the nurses with a little more respect and kindness, they will receive that in return.
Mm-hmm.
But, and as I said, the doctors, you know, many of them do dress, you know, you can dress casually and still look neat. But I remember some of them came to see their patients looking like they just finished cleaning up their yard at home or something like that. And I thought, now, I don't think the patient appreciates that. At least, you know, we didn't appreciate seeing the doctor looking so kind of grungy.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of shallow, and it's just a trite little thought, but it's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
That's about all I have to say.
Well, I appreciate your time and in allowing me to follow up with you on the original interview. And I'm sure you'll get something in the mail, or we'll be contacting kind of everyone since we're kind of nearing close kind of to the end. But we'll be in contact with you about where this is going. And I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.